Have you ever asked, what is heaven? Is it another dimension, a paradise? Does it really even exist? We're all going to pass from this earth, and knowing what comes next can end the fear of death and bring you peace. Our goal here at Hello Heaven is to answer these questions and many more considering the afterlife. Welcome to our podcast, Hello Heaven. Hello, everybody, and welcome to our podcast, Hello Heaven. I'm Barry Strom, your host. I'm the author of 10 books covering all aspects of the supernatural. I have a psychic ability to speak the words of the spirits. If you're interested in learning the truth about heaven and the afterlife, I assure you that you have come to the right place.
And I'm Connie Strom, your co-host. Barry and I have been communicating with spirits now for over 15 years, and we've compiled a huge amount of information about the afterlife. We currently have over 620 videos on our YouTube channel. If you'd like to see them, the channel is on the name of Barry Strom, and you can view the archives and all of our shows on the YouTube platform.
Now, the Hello Heaven podcast is broadcast on YouTube Live, as well as my personal Facebook page and in our Facebook groups. Our most active Facebook group at the time is Words of God Then and Now, and all of our live videos are broadcast there. Audios of our broadcasts can be downloaded on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Alexa, and many of the other audio platforms.
We're using a different format on Hello Heaven, using pre-recorded video calls where our listeners tell of supernatural events or personal experiences, such as near-death experience that happened to them, or questions they would like to ask of a spirit. If you'd like to participate in this program, send an email to onestrom@gmail.com and tell us about your questions, with whom you'd like to channel, and what you would like to discuss. Barry will get back to you with time to make the recording. Keep in mind that we do not want to do personal channeling in these calls unless it ties into some supernatural event that will be of interest to all of our listeners.
Now, today, I think you're going to find our interview very interesting, and you're going to hear many interesting truths about the afterlife, about many things, aliens. We cover a bunch of subjects in this interview, and I think that it is well worth you sticking around to hear this. This week, we're going to interview with Augie Noss. Augie was born in Norway. He's a man of many talents. He's a pilot, an author, expert in spiritual sciences, holistic health care, and more subjects than I really can list here. At the present time, he's the host of Broadcast Team Alpha, Mastermind Sunday, as well as other shows. Augie was kind enough to have me as a guest on his Broadcast Team Alpha show. I got to see just how knowledgeable he was firsthand. I thought it'd be very interesting to have an interview with Augie in which we ask his personal opinion on multiple spiritual and supernatural subjects. Throughout his career, he's interviewed thousands of guests, has heard various opinions on a huge variety of subjects. So anyway, Augie, welcome to Hello Heaven.
Hello, hello. Here we are.
We are indeed.
Yeah.
We're so excited to have you, Augie. Can't wait to hear your answers to some of our questions.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I don't get interviewed a lot by someone that has the spiritual context as you do. So I would also, in regard to what I may be talking about, I would welcome your comments also.
Oh yeah, and Connie will comment too. We can't often we can't keep her quiet, so you know we'll be off and running. Why don't we start by telling us a little bit about your background? Now, note that I said a little, because if you told us about everything you've done, we're not going to have any time for the interview.
Yeah, I know that those pages got too many, but you see the thing about it, I've done a lot, but there's nothing special about me, because the only difference between me and Joe on the couch is that I have done something. And a lot of people, they wish and they want and they dream and they meditate and they engage in all kinds of other spiritual practices in order to get to do what they like to do. But there's one thing that often is missing, and that is action. Nothing really happened much. It can, but not much without action. And that's where I have not been afraid to fail. I failed at a lot of things, but I've also succeeded because I did something with it. And that may be something that people out there could take heart to. Just go do something, even if it's wrong. You learn from it. And I don't know where I got on that tangent, but I came to the United States at the I was 25 years old to go to flight school, because I didn't want to be a farmer in Norway. And I flew for 23 years. I ended up with a partner. We had a flight school, an air taxi, international air taxi, and an air carrier. And after that, I quit, because I burned out, because I did not follow some of the success principles that I talked to other people about. I learned from myself, so to speak. And then I started studying the mind really heavy. I've been a meditator since I was probably about 17 or something like that. I go within and I open up to the universal mind, or God, if you like. That's I get information and messages, and this is something that a lot of people do, and they benefit tremendously, especially when it comes to health issues, because meditation, that removes stress and all kinds of other things. So it's a good thing to do, and I have... I hosted and produced two TV shows in Tucson for 6 years. And I've done radio shows and TV shows for 25 or more years. And I've learned a lot from the people that I've been able to interview. It's been such a wonderful time, because the reason we're here on Earth in the first place is not necessarily so much physical. The physical is irrelevant. We're going to do that whether we like to or not. But we're here to learn and grow spiritually, because that spiritual consciousness or spiritual essence, the soul, that lasts forever. It never dies, but the physical body does. Well, that's the rumor on the street anyway. So here I am, I guess. There's a lot more that could be said, but let's get to talk about something that can help the listeners out there.
Okay.
So how did you become interested in spiritual science? That's a long ways from being a pilot.
Being a meditator, it will lead you down that path, because you will have experiences. I don't think it can be avoided. There are spiritual energies, there are spiritual essences and beings out there that can communicate with you through a form of meditation. So it opens up the door for things to happen later on. And I think I really, okay, I'm going to go there.
Feel free to go there.
I had a tremendous spiritual experience when I was 25 years old, because I came to the United States to go to flight school in April, went back to Norway for Christmas, and went back to the farm that we sold the farm, so someone else owned it now, and I walked into the forest that we had. It was quite an extensive forest. And in the forest, there was a Viking grave mound. It was probably about 20 foot tall, high or something like this. So I crawled up on the grave mound. There was a rock up there. So I sat down and I started meditating. I just sat there and thought. And the thoughts went away and it kind of became empty. And then I heard like there was something, like somebody turned a faucet on because there was water running. And I remember that was strange because there was no water there. So I opened my eyes up and there was this man standing in front of me, about 6, 8, 10 feet. And it scared the daylight out of me because that man was lit up like a light bulb. He had kind of like a robe, but there were gold around his collar and gold on the edge of the sleeves, and he looked like somebody of authority. And I split, ran down there, and I wanted to get out of there so bad, and I heard this voice in my head. He said, "Where are you going?" And I thought about that. If he wanted to get me, he probably could have done that by now. So I walked back. Rather slowly, I walked back up on the mound again, and I sat down. And that became uncomfortable because he was 7 foot tall, and I was sitting down there. So I raised up, and we stood there face to face, and we had a conversation. It was mostly a him talking, me listen deal, but I did get some questions in, and I got some suggestions about some of the things that I should consider doing, as well as answers to some of my questions. But one of the questions was, "What's your name?" And he told me, "We do not use names. When we communicate with someone, we create their image. And that makes the contact. We create the image in their mind, and that creates the contact." And there were more things that was talked about on that mound, but that woke me up, and it gave me a hunger to go and research the spiritual world. Now, when I came back to the United States, I was busy flying, so I didn't do much with it for about 23 years. But after that, I went after it again.
And was that a light being, or was that a spiritual being, or what were you talking to?
It was a light being, yeah.
So it was an extraterrestrial being.
Yeah, evidently. He didn't live on Earth. That was obvious. So.
So just visiting. Yeah.
No, he was in a higher vibrations. Where that was, I wasn't sure of, but I was sure it was not in the third and the fourth dimensional existence.
Yeah, because I had an experience seeing a reptilian one night. Oh. But no, that was different, but. No, I mean, it's very interesting that you would have such an experience.
The reptilians, they are also, some of them are physical, just like you and me, but some of them also come from interdimensional areas, because there is a document on the CIA website. They call it the smoking gun document, where the CIA in their own station, they explain that, yes, we are in contact with aliens, and they are, most of them, interdimensional. So the reptilian saw could have been interdimensional.
Yeah, he was. I woke up in the middle of the night, and he was standing on the side of Connie's side of the bed. I looked. I had to clear my head because I can't believe when these things take place, you don't know what's going on. I cleared my head and I looked at him, and he turned at me and he grinned. I could see him smile, and I thought, whoa. And all of a sudden he knocks me out and I'm back asleep. So I wake up the next morning, not knowing whether I dreamed this, whatever. And we were working with our friends out in Salt Lake City doing channeling then. So I got him on Skype that night, and while I was writing the alien books, and we were channeling a spirit named Moo, who was the alien that was giving me all the information for the books. And I said to him, can you get Moo to come in for you out there? And they said, yes, he's here. So I said, I have one question I'd like to ask. Did I see an alien last night? Now, these people had no idea out in Salt Lake. We were in Pennsylvania at the time. And the answer comes back, yes. And did you see him smile at you? And I had not even told Connie about this thing smiling at me. So it was real.
That's your evidence.
Yeah. You know, there's no question.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, she's been abducted. And yeah. Moo gave her all the information about that as well. So it's a weird world.
The thing is that there's a lot of people out there that have had experiences like this, but they don't dare to talk about it because, you know, the stigma. And when they have experiences like that, the first thing we do, we try to reach into the brain and find a way to explain it away. Oh, yeah, that was just a dream. Or I had 18 beers last night, so there was nothing to it. You know, it was just, no. It could very well have been real. Connie, you're muted.
It's time to accept the realities of.
Yeah, Connie was, she had dropped me off in Fort Lauderdale. And Connie, why don't you tell the story? You know it better than I do.
Well, I was riding back up. We lived at Lauderdale was south of West Palm, and we lived north of West Palm. So I was driving back Interstate 95 at 10 o'clock in the morning, and that's pretty busy at that time of day. And I took note to the exit that I went by, and then immediately my consciousness left. But I didn't realize it was happening until two exits further north, all of a sudden my consciousness came back like someone pushed a button. And I said, oh.
You got muted here again.
Was. So you never know when it happens or what the reason is, but it's usually for educational purposes is the way they put it.
Yeah, I hope the listeners could hear that because I was dropped off as mute. I could not hear you, but I hope the listeners could.
Really?
Yeah.
You couldn't hear that? It's not supposed to work like that.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, sorry.
That's all right.
You can hear now, right?
Yes, I can. We're here for the listeners anyway, so it doesn't matter what I hear.
I'll leave my fingers off the buttons then.
Yeah.
Well, it's more important they hear what you have to say.
What is your concept of soul energies?
Well, a soul is the spark of life. It's an entirely spiritual, conscious energy. And there's a lot of people out there, you know, atheists and other people that really don't know much or don't believe much. And we have to love them for it, because they're on their journey and they will eventually realize the truth too, hopefully before they drop the body. Because if they drop the body and have no knowledge whatsoever of the spiritual world, they could become one of those things that we call ghosts, because they don't know where to go. And as an astral traveler, I have run into them outside of the physical. And almost every one of them out there, they were atheists. They don't have any spiritual knowledge. So they're confused. They're needy. They want to ask questions. Could you tell my wife I'm okay? Or, you know, things like that. Because they have no knowledge of the spiritual world. And what I see out there is the spiritual or the soul essence. You can also see the astral vehicle, which is a separate thing that is more connected to the physical body. And there's a little interesting story about a doctor in, I think he... let's see. I think I wrote down where he was. We got to have that right. So, yeah, Dr. Duncan McDougall. He was from Haverhill, Massachusetts. He set out to measure the weight of the soul. And he thought he did. Because he published a paper in 1907. In the American Medicine Journal. And in fact, the paper, you can go look it up, because hypothesis concerning soul substance together with experimental evidence of the existence of such substance. What he did, he took find six people over a period of time that was close to death. And in the hospital, they put the hospital bed on very sensitive industrial scales. They measured when he ate something, the weight went up. And, they measured what the weight was 24/7. And then when they died, within a very short, a minute or two after, or right at the time, the weight of the bed and the person in it just suddenly became 21 grams lighter. That happened to every one of them. So there was something that they couldn't see that left the body.
Well, I actually observed that one time. We were up at Deer Valley skiing, Connie and I, and we were standing in line at this lift, and about 10 feet away from us, this guy just falls over and collapses. And right after he does this, I see this, like this light brown cloud that's comes out of his body. So the guides actually arranged one time for me to witness this thing as it was taking place. The soul is real. I mean, there is no question.
Yeah, I have seen it. There was an older gentleman in this house also that died here. And somebody was with him at the time. And I was standing about probably 10, 15 minutes later, I was standing in the doorway looking at him. And I saw this grayish, kind of brownish substance just leaving the body and whoosh, up through the ceiling.
Yep, that's exactly what I saw.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Hey, Augie, what are your beliefs about the effectiveness of prayer?
Oh, prayer. Well, you hear a lot of people say, yeah, prayer, that doesn't work. I've tried that 416 times and nothing happened. Well, maybe it's because they're not doing it right. When you sit around the dinner table, let's say you got a family sitting around and they all hold hands and they say something to the effect of, oh, please, we need $416 to repair the car here. Then they go through several things and then they turn and say, I'll pass the butter, Martha, I'm hungry. That doesn't go anywhere. The words are almost irrelevant. There's some neuroscience to this. And that means that look at where the prayer goes. Does the prayer stay in the physical? No. So the words that you utter goes out of the physical into a spiritual existence to make a contact with God or the universal consciousness or something or some entity out there to come and help. They can't hear your voice, but they can see and they can feel and they can experience all the emotion and the feelings that come with it. When you sit around the table, what they rather should do is to create a mental image of what they want. Not the stack of $100 bills, no. Brand new car, maybe. Or something that they need and want help in creating in their physical reality. Create a mental image and feed it with emotion and feeling and love. And feel the gratitude for already having it now. Feel as you have it. That is what the spiritual world reacts to. And I'm play on word here, but it looks at that and say, wow, that is tremendous emotion around this. I think I'll help out. Because that is what we're doing in the mastermind that Nori Love and I put together. And we seem to create out of seemingly nothing sometimes. The healings that we have done there is based on these principles. As an example, there was a lady in the hospital here, probably a few months ago. She was really bad shape. She was going right down the tubes from COVID. And the next day, they're going to put her on this substance that we're not supposed to say on YouTube, as well as put her on the ventilator. And you know that's what do away with you. Every one of them seems to. When you go on the ventilator, you're gone. But we wrapped our mastermind around her. We saw her walking out of the hospital the next day. Actually, we just saw her walking out of the hospital. I didn't. At the end of the session, I made a flippant comment like, oh, she'll be home tomorrow. The next day, her husband called me and he says, my wife is home. She was in coma the day before. These are the kinds of things when you engage the universal mind or God or other spiritual entities to come in and help. You do it with emotion, vivid, colorful images, and love it into existence. That is what works with prayer. And the church doesn't know how to pray. They definitely don't teach you how to do it. There is one guy, actually two now that I know of, and the other one is Greg Braden, because he studied the old texts. But there is a guy. We know him as Moses. He is the only one in the old text that really teaches how to pray. And there is 12 books that is credited to him. I have 10 of them on the bookshelf. And I think in the 7th book, or it could be the 6th, I forget what it is now, he teaches you how to pray. In fact, let me tell you what he says in that book. And he talks about, let me see, I wrote it down here. Here we go. He says first, go in. Now the first, do not flaunt or express your prayers among people who mock you. Because their energy of disbelief, by osmosis, you're going to absorb some of it. The second one is, go in your chamber. That doesn't mean going in the closet and close the door. No, it means go within yourself, in your mind. And then he says, know what you want. In other words, if you don't know it, how in the world can you get help? And then he says, see it in your heart. That means visualizing it. And science has now found that we have two brains, one in the cranium and one in the heart. The brain in the heart's got somewhere around 50,000 neurons, and that brain is responsible for most of the emotion and spiritual experiences, because it is hardwired to the pineal gland, which is the gate to the universal mind from us. And now also, Moses said, speak it aloud with emotions so the tears flow. That is strong emotion. We all have seen people cry, but not because of a negative thing, because of happiness and emotion. And then he says, know it is yours. Do not waffle. You claim it. I got it. It's mine. And then he says, leave it to God. With other words, let go. It's kind of like going to the internet and order something. You go to the internet, you go to the page, and you find the order form. You put your information and the credit card number in, and you click buy, and then you forget it. You know it's going to come.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah.
When we first started to channel Jesus, we couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
So he said, I'm going to prove to you that you truly are speaking to me. He said, I am going to give you a prayer of healing. Mm-hmm. And then he gives me this prayer. It's a very simple prayer. And then he says, go heal this person. He gives me a name. I had no clue who this was. I was talking at a convention in Salt Lake. And it turns out that the person in charge of the convention was the name that he gave me. So I said the prayer for her, and that was the first one. But we had one of our listeners was doing a show. We were recording some events that he had. And he said, it's kind of a tough day because my mother's in the hospital with pneumonia. And they just called me and said that she probably is not going to make it through the day. Ooh. So I've got to go into the hospital when this is over. So I said, well, let me say the prayer for her and we'll see what happens. Long story short, 6 days later, she was home. Just the same as your story. So
yeah,
prayer is incredibly powerful. And I mean, people, I can't believe how an atheist lives. That not believing and not understanding and just thinking that there is nothing at the end. I mean, It's very sad. In my mind, I mean, I can't comprehend it. Now, I do have a little inside information that maybe the atheist doesn't have, but I'm trying to give it to them. All they got to do is listen.
Yeah, and, you know, thinking at it from an atheist point of view, your life is kind of a waste, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely it is.
Yeah, when there's nothing that you create stuff here, a few hundred years from now, it's all gone. House, property, everything you did is forgotten. But if you follow the soul essence, then it lives on and lives forever.
Indeed.
But I wanted to touch on something else on the issue of prayer also. There is actually ample evidence for it, that it works. There is a doctor named Larry Dossey, and I highly recommend that you guys listening to this look into this. And you can use what he is showing in his research. He reviewed 60-some medical conditions, and he found prayer is not something that you do, he says. It is something that you are. A really negative person, when he prays, I don't really know what he can create except negative things, because that's in his mind.
Absolutely.
Now, yeah, so, and he says that laying of hands is something that the Christians do. That is not necessarily touching the body, but you get in the bioelectromagnetic field of the body, which is close to it, but you can put your hands in there. And then he says that they took the 60 plus people here, and they broke them up into two groups. One of them, they were praying over the people using laying of hands or just praying. And the other group, they did nothing for it. The group that was prayed over, every one of them recovered faster on the average of something like 37% faster.
Mm-hmm.
That's just because of the prayer, because they have similar conditions of illness, similar medication, but the group that was prayed over recovered a third faster.
Absolutely.
And there's a book. He says the book is it's called Healing Words, and Prayer is Good Medicine. Go look that book up, because you're going to find some really interesting stuff that makes things work just on the physical level of what we are doing. But we reach into the spiritual realm and bring home the help.
Good stuff. Augie, what is your concept of God?
Well, which one?
Whichever one you want.
I think it was the United Nations did a survey in about 1980 something that they found that there are 3,000 gods on earth right now, or things that people claim is God.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that gets a little confusing. The word God was given a meaning it was never meant to have in people's mind. If you trace the word back, you will go end up all the way back into the Sumerian texts. The Anunnaki, they told them, we are your gods. But in the Sumerian language, that meant the word gods means great leader. So the Anunnaki that claim they created humanity, they told them, we are your great leader. And I'll go with that. They were great leaders, not necessarily all good, but they were all great leaders. So then we can take it from that physicality of it. The God that I think we should be thinking about is the one. that is instrumental in creating the environment that we are able to exist in. With other words, this world, this dimensional existence, and this universe. So that is an intelligent source. Some people call it source.
Yes.
And that's a good word for it, because it is the source of one thing. In fact, we also hear that God is love. I have it from a higher authority that that is true, because Albert Einstein said in an interview about a year before he died, he said, "I have studied the universe more than most, and I have found that this whole universe is made from the vibration of love."
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Augie, what's your concept of heaven?
Heaven? Then again, maybe there's more than one heaven. When it comes to that question, let's talk to the experts, the ones that have had near-death experiences, have been there and come back and talk about it. They are the experts, because they've seen it, they felt it, they've done it, been there. So they see people here when they end up outside of the body and they look back at themselves and say, "Wait a minute, I'm there, but I'm here too." And then they find themselves maybe going through a tunnel, a lit up tunnel at the other end, and there's their mom standing at the other end. They say, "No, no, no, son, you can't come here yet. You have to go back. You have more work to do." That is one. That happens a lot for the near-death experiences. Then there are others that make it through the tunnel. Somebody come and meet them, and they are experiencing wonderful things, and they feel the sensation of love is permeating everything. That is one heaven. Then again, there are people in the Middle East. They have same experiences, but they're dressed like they do. And people out of India, they got turbans on going through that tunnel, every one of them. So it depends a little bit about our conception of what we believe here. We take that with us, and we are able to recreate some of the afterlife, after physical life experiences on the basis of what we are here.
I'm just going to say, that's not exactly the way we're told. Heaven will be what you think it's going to be in most instances.
There you go.
And getting back to our old friends, the atheists, they think there's nothing.
Yeah.
So it's the old, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, because most of them, they find themselves in darkness.
Right.
Afterwards.
Because that's what they expect.
Yeah, because that's the lower astral world. It's fairly dark. Mm-hmm. It's not lit up very well.
No.
And while they're there, they find other people that is confused too. So they share confusion, and that doesn't help a lot.
No. Augie, what do you think is the closest we can come to proving the existence of God?
Well, there's some neuroscience to that too.
That's why I ask. I knew you'd
know. There's this thing in the brain called the God Center, and they see that when someone dies, they usually have visions at the very, very end. They can see dead relatives come to visit them.
Yes,
and things like that. And this has been done experiments with on someone that were dying. They put all the electrodes on their head, and they measure that this God center that just lights up. So there is some connection between that God center in the brain to the outside of the physical reality. And here, I think for now, and we can see that there is a communication going on between the physical and the, call it afterlife or outside of it, in the spiritual arena. But I still think that dying is something that is an individual thing. Nobody can do it for you.
No.
So it is when somebody have a near-death experience, that means that they die, they go there, see, experience, and they come home and talk about it. There are millions of people around the world that have had that experience. I don't think they're all lying.
No. No, they aren't. No. I mean, a lot of them have different experiences, but
yeah,
it's the old, it's what you expect part is generally what I see when we talk to with these people.
Yeah. I used to say this about UFOs, but I will say it about heaven and life after death also. If all the evidence was taken into a court of law, adjudicated before a judge and a jury, there would have been, I'm joking here, but there would have been a hanging a long time ago. So there it would have been judged to be real, because there's too many experiences from
exactly.
People. And there are different experiences, but they have many, many things in common.
Yes, indeed.
And then there is this very small percentage that find themselves what they call hell.
Mm-hmm.
It is, I heard some people say that they think is somewhere around 1% or less. And that probably would come from the, let's say someone did something so bad in his past that he is totally convinced that the preacher is right. Because
exactly.
You did that, you're going to hell. You're going downstairs in the basement next to the furnace, and you're going to burn the rest of your life. And if they believe that, they could find themselves in a place like that, because the mind brought them there. And they will stay there until they figure it out that you can think yourself out of there by asking forgiveness or realizing that this is mine created too, so I don't need to be here anymore, and then they can get out.
Indeed. I mean, we've already talked a little bit about aliens, and we both have seen them, so obviously we both believe in them. But when do you think disclosure is going to take place?
Oh, it has already happened. It's just that nobody talks about it. It's in the government documents. I mentioned that smoking gun document. That's one of them. I have another one from the FBI files. It's a memorandum from 1958, I think, where they had a flying disc that crashed, and they examined the occupants. And I also have drawings and pictures of their hand, three fingers, and that's all. And they say that the body of the alien was closer to a plant than it is to a physical human being, the physiology of it. And they say, yeah, they are interdimensionals. They come here from other planets. All the government documents show this, and there's many of them. For one incident, there was a guy that worked for NASA. He, for 18 months, he was studying the activity on the moon, moving lights with shadows on the ground, explosions, and big ships traveling. You could see them on the big telescopes. And he said, after watching it for 18 months, and he made the statement that Earth has and is being visited by extraterrestrial life on a regular basis. That came from NASA.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Russian president at the time, Medvedev in Moscow. He, after an interview, he was asked by the TV station, the interviewer, they said, what can you tell us about extraterrestrials and UFOs? Now, Medvedev, he thought the camera was off, but it wasn't. So they caught it. And he said, oh, yeah, when we take office, he says, we get this dossier. That dossier is a file. And it explains about the alien presence and the UFOs that is already here, but we can't talk about it because they tell us that we are afraid of panic.
Exactly.
The interviewer thought that was so great, they ran it all on live TV in Moscow. The Russians know. But we, of course, we're dumber than loaf of bread when it comes to this, for when it comes to the extraterrestrial issue, except for those that have studied it.
Yes. But no, they're definitely real.
Yeah.
So do you think extraterrestrials are actually living among us?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you think we have anything to fear from?
No, not the ones that look like us and travel among us, and they live here. They could have been here for a long time. And Jordan Maxwell talked about his experience when he was about 20 years old. He had a girlfriend, and the girlfriend took him home. And his father talked to him and he said, do you remember? And he told him an incident that no one could know about except for Jordan. And he told him about things that was going to happen in the future. And later on, he discovered, yes, they did happen. And then he went back to, right after that first meeting, he went back to visit them and the house was empty. They were gone. They came here for a message to him. So that's just one incident. And there's many others that have met with extraterrestrials, including myself and you, and you know, so on.
Oh, yeah. If we were working with a with a really, really sharp medium, or a psychic, she was as good as anyone I've ever been around. And we were doing a channeling session where she was sitting in on it. And I asked the guides, I said, have I ever met a Palladian? And the guide comes back and says, yes, you're sitting next to one. She was actually, and she didn't even realize it at the time. She goes, oh my God, now I can put a lot of facts together. But yeah. She was an amazing psychic, probably the best I've ever been around.
I have a friend here in Arizona. I don't think he minds if I tell you the name, Jerry Wills. He was not an earthly baby when he came here. He was dropped off. And later on, they came and told them, they told him who they were and who he was. And they were one difficult time in his life, and they showed up again and said, you can't. This is hard on you, but you can come back with us if you want to. He decided to stay because he's really helping mankind a lot.
I actually took time to listen to some of the interviews that you do on YouTube.
Oh, boy.
So what is universal consciousness?
That is all there is. Consciousness is all there is, because this is going to get out in the weeds with you, but
okay, well, we got a weed cutter, we're ready.
Yeah, there you go. All of the stuff you see around you is not real. It is a projection in holographic form put in place by a self-aware, holographically projected universal mind. And there's some evidence to this. There's this physicist, his name is James Gates. He says that when we look deep in the equations using quantum mechanics, deep in the equations explaining the fabric of space, we find computer language. We didn't put it there, but it just shows up. So if there's computer language in the fabric of space, and just like it also is in the double helix, then there's got to be a computer somewhere. Not like the one you're sitting here looking at now, but there is a computer consciousness. There's a consciousness that needs computer language in order to express itself so we can understand it. And another thing is, to prove that nothing is real, I'm a hypnotist. If I put you in a soft chair and talk to you for 10 minutes and I tell you that when I wake you up, I snap my finger and bring you back out, you're going to see an elephant standing next to you. I don't care if you're on the 34th floor of an apartment building with doors so small that there's no chance of that elephant getting there. You're going to see the elephant. So you reach out and you touch the snout on that elephant and you can feel the rough skin in your hand. You can hear him breathing. You smell him. That elephant is there. But there's a problem. I can't see the elephant because there's no elephant there. But in your mind, that elephant is 100% real. You can feel him. So what happened to your universe? Did it go away? Yeah, it did. You created something from your mind that is absolutely real to you. The same system at a much larger scale is created by the universal mind, funneled through us using our brain and our neuroscience. And based on memory of what we have accepted, we have created this environment around us that we live in because it is absolutely solid and real to us, just like the snout on the elephant.
Okay, I got to get a bigger weed cutter.
Yeah.
Okay, you brought it up. What is quantum mechanics?
Quantum mechanics...
Yep, we're in the weeds. Keep going, buddy.
Yeah. I am not so sure. I've never looked up the definition of it, but it is the teachings of subatomic particles and waves and energy that we cannot see without special equipment. And there is some experiments now that is proven that these subatomic particles, they interact with our mind and help us create our reality around us. In fact, there's quantum mechanics experiments that prove that you can even repair the past. That's time travel backwards. There was, you can look up the experiment. It's Helmut, it's a German scientist named Helmut Schmidt. How much more German can you get than that?
Yeah, not much. You're there now.
Yeah. He did an experiment where he, this cannot be explained except for through quantum mechanics. And he said that he took a random number computer and he split it up, wires coming from it, one to the right ear, one to the left ear, and they were giving out clicks to the right and the left ear, and they were recording it onto a, this a few years back, it was done with a cassette tape. And then they listened to it afterwards. Random numbers computer. That means that you should have equal clicks in the right ear, pretty much 50-50, 49-51 on an occasion, 48-52. But it should be fairly even. And then he did some experiments where he did the same thing. He sent the clicks out, but nobody looked at it. He took it, he had an intern take it home and sit and look at it. And on one of the recording from one ear, and he decided that there were a lot more clicks on this one than the other ear. Now, that he was totally convinced there was much more clicks on the, I think it was the right ear than the left. And they took it back and they ran the recording. And there was a huge difference between the right ear and the left ear, just because what he thought about. So when they did the recording a day or so earlier, it should have been equal or close to it. But he took it home. Hours later, he changed the recording from what it was a day ago into being much more clicks on one ear. This opened up the door for us to realize that, first of all, time travel is real. For the second is, we can control our timeline and what's in it, even the past. Oh, let's get deep.
Yeah, I'm not even sure what to say to that one.
Yeah. But if somebody starts studying quantum mechanics, they will never be the same again, because they
don't
know. Yeah.
Well, how do these sciences relate to spirituality and religion?
Spirituality and religion. Religion, look at what religion has done to us. I'm probably one of the few non-Muslims that has read the Quran, and in there I don't remember exactly the numbers, but according to other people that have also read it, they find 128 different places in it where it says that if you are an infidel, with other words, one that don't believe in Allah, you're supposed to be killed, or that should be done away with you. And they control the people to the point where there is no freedom. Same thing in the Christian. But look at the Spanish Inquisition. Look at what they did. Nasty stuff. They killed everybody that didn't. They ran them through the Inquisition, and then they did away with them if they didn't believe a certain way. That's what religion do. Now they have a different way to control people. They do away with them now too, but that's more economic in these other areas.
Yes.
But spirituality is all about love and freedom. Freedom to think and grow at your own rate and find your truth, find the spiritual source from where you came. Discover the soul. Discover the spiritual reality and discover God. It's not that you're told you're going to believe in this God, otherwise we're going to kill you. Well, yeah. Spirituality don't talk that.
That the same supreme spirit that Christians refer to as God is the exact same spirit that the Muslims refer to as Allah. Just a different name for the same energy.
Yeah, there's more to this story that when Muhammad actually wrote the first writings, that first writing was full of love.
Exactly.
It was a good book.
Yeah, another good book. I wrote a book on channeling the Prophet Muhammad.
Ah, okay.
So that was book 9. So, no, we have chats, and but exactly what you're saying. He taught a religion of love, and it was changed.
But it happened, but it changed because of people's interpretation of it. And there were people after him that said, yeah, that sounds good, but let's get rid of this and this and this and this, because we want to control the people and we want to profit.
That's right.
Yeah.
You got it. I hate to bring this up, but we've been doing this for over an hour.
Oh.
And, I enjoyed every second of it. We're going to have to do this one again. So.
Okay.
Why don't you take a couple minutes, tell everybody how to get in touch with you, what you're doing, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot out there want to hear about it, more than what you got to say.
Well, yeah, there's a lot more to talk about, so we could do another one. If you want to get in touch with me, go to our website at broadcastteamalpha.com. You can also find us on YouTube under the same name. But if you want to get a hold of me and or Nori, my co-host on the show, go to broadcastteamalpha.com and send us a message and we'll get it and we'll get back to you. I wrote a book that actually, it's about 8 years ago now, but it's just as popular now as it was back then, because I teach people how to use their mind in ways that you normally would think would be impossible. And, oh boy, that's pretty transparent. Here we go. Spiritual science, higher conscious thinking, and how to access the universal consciousness. If you go to Amazon and put my name in there, the book will come up, among other things. So, this is something that I teach you how to use your mind in a way you normally would think would be impossible. There's more to it than that. I talk about spiritual things. I talk about how we can do astral journey. I teach you a way that you could actually engage in time travel. And you can go places, see things, and come back and remember and deal with it. And there is also, I used to teach a mind development course that we taught people how to assimilate information out of a book at the rate of 50 to 100,000 words per minute with 95% retention.
Wow.
And it's simple, but it's not easy because it's a little practice on your part.
Yeah, and you simple know how, for you maybe.
Yeah. But the thing is that we don't like to do anything that we have to practice. Mm. We need a pill, and we just take the pill and bingo,
really?
We got it.
Mm-hmm.
But not all things work that way.
Indeed.
Yeah. So I'd love to hear from you guys. I'm here, so I'm totally available to anybody that get in touch.
We'll take you up on that, Augie. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah.
Yeah, Augie, that was amazing. It lived up to expectations, and I got to find my way back out of the weeds. But, it was great.
Yeah, that was fun.
Okay, Augie, thank you so much. We are definitely going to do this one again.
Okay.
We just scratched the surface.
So, yeah, we scratched on the scratch that was scratched into the surface.
You got that right. You got it right. So thank you, buddy. We will speak again. So,
okay.
Goodbye, in the thank you.
In the words of Spock, live long and prosper.
We got it. See you later, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Do, 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 do.